24 years ago, let me say that again, 24 years ago, the Boston Globe made the first revelations about the sex scandal, which had existed for decades before then within the Catholic Church. From day one now, of that point, the efforts for justice and fairness was met with one denial and refusal after another. Those who created and pushed those denials and refusals ignored one very important fact, though. The resolve of those wronged will always outlast and overcome every effort designed to deny them justice. That's why today, for the victims, that's become far more just than it has been yesterday. This was recently evidenced by a decision by the Diocese of Camden in New Jersey. My first guest today has been a strong legal advocate for the victims of rape by Catholic priests, and his dedication to justice has played a major role in bringing this day about. He is the founder of the law firm Gianfrancaro Law. Gregory Gianfrancaro, how are you today, sir?
How are you? Thanks for having me. And what? It has been a long time. It's been a long, long fight.
Indeed. GianfrancaroLaw.com. Learn more about Mr. Gianfrancaro's law firm and the work that they do for people. Not just for purpose, but for people. That's the difference that they make. So, this has a lot of importance to it for a variety of reasons. Obviously, let's get to what the, we have to say at this time, proposed settlement is, because it still has to be approved by the court. But as we speak, what are we looking at, Greg?
Well, it's $180 million, and it has been a long time coming, but this would, and you are correct, it has to get court approval, but that's basically a done deal because everyone else, including the victims, the creditors committee, the lawyers, both for the diocese and for the survivors, as well as the insurance companies, have all signed off on this. So I think it's just just confirming everything that everybody's agreed to, and I anticipate that that's not going to be a problem.
And this is one of the largest settlements up to this point, at least Los Angeles Roman Catholic Diocese. They had reached a $880 million agreement back in 2024. Archdiocese New Orleans in last September agreed to pay $230 million for settlement for the victims that they created through their ignorance of the reality. And as I said a moment ago, Greg, this is important for a variety of reasons, because the Camden Diocese, they were hard set against any kind of confession, no pun intended, or making restitution to the victims. They were fighting every single element, as I alluded to in the introduction. What changed? What brought them around to see that this is the right thing to do?
Well, I think one of the issues was they got a new bishop. And I think this bishop came on board. If you recall, the Camden Diocese opposed the grand jury investigation.
Right.
And that was back earlier in the year. And shortly after hearing oral arguments, the bishop, who really just came on board within the past, give or take about less than a year ago, he felt when he learned of this situation, he set aside the arguments and he said, I don't care how the court rules, we will be subject, my diocese, the Camden Diocese, will agree to be subject to and comply with the Attorney General's investigation. So I think that spoke volumes to the commitment and the change of leadership and wanting to try and at least put forth some type of cooperation. And I think that made a lot of difference. Maybe, in fact, it may have made all the difference here.
Is this going to matter, too, in any way, shape, or form, do you think? I mean, it's tough to predict how other separate entities are going to react to the action of one, but there's ongoing litigation with the Newark Diocese, the Metuchen Diocese. Is this move by Camden going to influence what those two dioceses do? Thinking, well,
I have to believe.
No, I'm sorry.
In answer to your question, I have to believe it will. I think that that because once there's a commitment from the diocese, this just goes to show you that these cases can be settled, that we can reach an agreement, that there could be insurance added to this, but a component where the diocese as well as their insurance companies make a substantial contribution enough to get these cases settled, I think. And I don't think, like what the Camden Diocese went through, I do not think it requires that they file bankruptcy. I think this is going to be a model for things to come.
With that filing for bankruptcy, the layperson would think, well, that's the diocese trying to avoid any kind of financial responsibility. Is that just an illegal sense, a way to protect themselves and to minimize damage? Because, I mean, you can agree to pay $1,000, but if you can pay $1 million, it's even better.
It is. And I remember when they filed bankruptcy, it was, I think a lot of the clients felt like, oh, we're going to get nothing. And I said, that's not the case. Bankruptcy does not mean that you're not going to get everything, that you're going to get nothing. There's a process in place. I will say that one of the things that did help was the change in the bankruptcy. I don't want to say the bankruptcy laws, but at least the way bankruptcies were proceeding. And I say that because a lot of I'm sure all your listeners, and I know you guys have done programs on it, the Sackler family with the OxyContin cases, and how that the Sackler family tried to benefit from the bankruptcy without paying any money. And the bankruptcy court, and that was the Second Circuit, said, oh no, that's not going to be the way we're going to handle it. If the Sackler family wants to benefit from the bankruptcy, they're going to have to pay a substantial contribution themselves. Now, how does that impact the church, the Catholic Church? Well, in the past, it's been the diocese that has been able to file bankruptcy, and then their subsidiary corporations would benefit. And those subsidiary corporations were the parishes. Once the OxyContin case and the bankruptcy, that matter changed the landscape, then I think these dioceses had to take another look at whether or not they wanted to file or whether it was feasible to file bankruptcy, because now it would only benefit the diocese rather than help with the separately incorporated parishes. So I think that kind of freed up a lot of things. But unfortunately with Camden, the insurance companies were able to access a lot of the arguments as the OxyContin case went through the Supreme Court. But the bottom line is now it's going to be much more difficult for the diocese and their related parishes to file bankruptcy. It's a lot more complex. I think that and the fact that this Camden Diocese has resolved these cases or will have resolved these cases once the plan is approved, I think it shows that there is a means to an end and that there is a way to resolve these cases. But it's been a long time coming. It really has been.
Oh, sure. And just between, we have to wrap up here, but just between the 2019 signing into law the New Jersey Victims' Rights Bill, again, that was 2019, the payoff really didn't happen for what's been now almost 6-7 years later. But without that bill becoming law, then the justice that we're finally seeing for these thousands of victims and many more, because I think something like this has a ripple effect across the nation. Every state has dioceses that are culpable in what we see. This isn't exclusive to New Jersey. Find out more about the law firm, Gianfrancaro Law. Their website is gianfrancarolaw.com. Gregory Gianfrancaro, thank you for being a devoted, dedicated, strong advocate for the victims in all this and the voice that you gave to them. Thanks for being here today.
And thank you for all the work that you do at at disclosing it. I think media pressure helps significantly, and I think it got helped this situation dramatically, and I appreciate that.